It's fall at JCPenney. Time to refresh your closet. This Thursday through Monday, get Levi's lowest prices of the season on 514 straight fit jeans for guys, $36.99. And select Arizona booties for her for $35.99. Plus, save an additional 50% off clearance prices already reduced by 60 to 80%. And get an extra $10 off with your coupon. Hurry in now. JCPenney. Coupon valid 10, 5 to 10, 9. Levi's and other brands excluded from coupon. Clearance selections vary by store while supplies last. Savings off regular and original prices. Intermediate markdowns may have been taken. See store or jcp.com for details. Season of 1st, 9/27 to 10/18.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Thought Grenades with Robert Dobson and Mike Neese on Blog Talk Radio. Robert is the author of The Offsite, Leadership Challenge Babel, and the founder of LeaderInsideOut.com.
Welcome once again to Thought Grenades with Robert Thompson and co-host Mike Neese. This is Monday, April 13, 2015. And, of course, this is Robert Thompson coming to you live from the beautiful San Francisco Bay, as we do each and every Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific time. And, of course, from the shores of Lake Michigan, it's my good friend and co-host Mike Neese. Mike, say hello to our wonderful listeners.
Hello, all.
A little different.
Short and sweet, you know.
Yeah, short and sweet. We've got a great show once again today. We continue our leadership for the common good theme with Keith Hammond, COO of the Solutions Journalism Network. Keith comes to the network from Oshaga, where he started and led the News and Knowledge Initiative, advancing the work of hundreds of social entrepreneurs and media around the world. He also has been executive editor at Fast Company Magazine, a bureau chief and editor for Business Week in Boston and New York, a writer for the New York Times in London and Johannesburg, consultant to New Nation in Johannesburg, a director of an emergency food distribution program in Namibia, and most importantly these days, he's coach of the Firebolts, a fearsome girls soccer team, and I think that's probably got the highest priority in his life. Folks, if you have a question or a thought to share, please call in at 347-989-0965. That number is 347-989-0965. And, of course, never miss a session by subscribing to Thought Grenades on iTunes. That way Mike and I are right there in your mobile device. If you're looking for something practical, simple, and effective, this is the place. Keith, it's good to have you on. Thanks for taking the time to be with us.
Robert, Mike, it's great to join you. Thanks.
You've got a great background, and I have to say, to get things rolling here, we've already chatted a little bit before the show, Solutions Journalism Network, thank you for existing.
I appreciate that.
I know it's tough out there to get started in things like this and doing it from a nonprofit perspective. Talk a little bit about the organization. Tell us, give us a little snapshot of why you're in this business. Your background is obviously in journalism. But why are you doing solution journalism? What is it and why?
Sure. Solutions Journalism Network is an independent nonprofit organization. We started up a little more than 2 years ago and really came out of a column that two of our co-founders, David Bornstein and Tina Rosenberg, have been writing for 5 years now for the New York Times called Fixes. And Fixes appears in the Opinionator section of the Times. It is each week a deeply reported investigation of the response to a social problem of some urgency, and that could be in healthcare, education, environment. We have plenty of problems to choose from, but this column is focused on the solutions, on the responses. And the column has done very well for the Times. It is regularly among the most emailed stories for the week across the paper, across the site. Gets a ton of reader reaction. David and Tina get directly a lot of reaction. And so after a while, they started wondering, first of all, why is that? You know, why do these sorts of stories, these solutions-oriented stories, engage people, it seems, differently than so-called traditional reporting? And secondly, if that's so, why aren't more news organizations pursuing it? Why aren't they doing solutions reporting? So the Solutions Journalism Network is their response to those two questions, an attempt to build capacity for critical, compelling reporting about the solutions to urgent social problems. That's what we do.
That's what you do, and you do it very well. The question I have is, so are these articles that you write, do they get placed in other newspapers around the country and other media around the country, or is it just online? How do I sign up for this?
Beyond the fixes column, which Tina and David continue to write, Solutions Journalism Network is itself not a publisher of content. We don't report stories per se. We work with journalists and news organizations to catalyze solutions reporting across a range of sites and media platforms. So, we have had in 2 years relationships with 40 news organizations, everything from big papers like the Seattle Times and the Boston Globe to online sites like Yahoo News and Huffington Post, we're just starting up with, to Univision and television, to a bunch of public radio stations. And at each of those organizations, we typically go in and do a workshop with staff to teach them what is solutions journalism anyway, why is it important, and how do you do it. And then after that workshop, we will work with editorial staff on sort of a consulting basis, advisory basis, to help them build out solutions-oriented reporting projects, and get them published or aired. And in some cases, we actually help to support those projects financially, bringing to catalyze reporting that otherwise would not have happened at a moment when,
right,
as we all know, most newsrooms are feeling some financial pressure.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Mike, you had a comment?
Yeah, actually, it fits right into that. I mean, I hate to say it, Keith, but I'm at the age that I've grown a little cynical about journalism in general.
Uh-huh.
It seems to me, and I may be wrong here, but it appears to me as I look at it these days, it's driven much more by market demand and trying to produce revenue than really being that important part of our society that provides that voice that helps us make some informed decisions. So I just wonder, how's the economics looking for this solutions journalism? Can you compete?
Well, it's a great question. I mean, as far as we're concerned directly, we are mostly foundation funded. So we have 8 or 10 big foundation relationships with Gates Foundation, Rockefeller, Einhorn, Knight Foundation, a few more, who, foundations who are interested in the vitality of journalism, addressing the challenge that, that you and I and most of us share, and also more generally interested in the vitality of civic life, of democracy.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I mean, on one level, that's the answer to your question. The bigger question, which you suggest, is does a solutions-oriented approach move the needle in terms of a business strategy? And I think
exactly.
You're right. Many papers and other media are chasing clicks, looking for traffic that can connect to advertising, sponsorship, whatever revenue at a time when the traditional business model has collapsed. The question is, do people engage with solutions stories in ways that are different from this more problem-driven, sensationalistic reporting, and can we connect that to a business case? And we have some answers on that. We don't have complete intelligence. So we have done some A/B testing comparing two versions of the same stories, one a solutions version, the other a problem version, showing it to 750 survey respondents nationwide, and then asking them about their reactions. And the results of that were very powerful. on three levels. First of all, people who read the solutions version tended to say that they learned more, that their knowledge had changed as a result of that story. They said, secondly, that their sense of agency or self-efficacy had changed. They didn't say it in those words, of course, because that's
sure.
not survey language, but they said they feel, you know, more empowered to act as a result of reading the solution stories. But most telling, you know, related to your original question, people who read solution stories were more likely to say that they would read more stories in the same paper, or that they would read more stories by the same author, or that they would share that story with friends and family, or that they would talk about it, or that they would engage in the issue, try to connect with an organization who is solving the problem, donate money, et cetera, et cetera. So all very powerful indicators of, you know, of higher engagement. We saw the same sort of thing in an audience survey that the Seattle Times conducted last summer. And the Seattle Times is one of our biggest projects. And there they asked readers about their reactions to stories in this series that the Times has produced called Education Lab, focused on solutions in education. Excuse me. And there again, it was a very strong response indicating higher levels of engagement, that people were grateful for this sort of reporting, were more interested in solutions-oriented stories than in comparable problem-oriented education stories, were very likely to share these stories with others. So if you get to these sorts of indicators, you know, especially on sharing stories, that is a great engagement metric for publishers. And the question is, you know, how does that actually translate into a sales strategy that changes the revenue calculus? And that's, you know, that's we're early on. That's still playing out. But that's the sort of metric that we're going after.
Yeah, that's hopeful. Very good.
Very hopeful. Talk a little bit more about the projects that you're working on. I think people would be interested in that. You mentioned Seattle Times, it's education focused. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, Education Lab is now in its second year. This is a project funded both by the Gates Foundation and the Knight Foundation. And in that case, this is a very unusually intensive project for sort of a laboratory to understand how the solutions approach plays out in a real big city newsroom. So we have actually dedicated, in that case, two full-time reporters to solutions-oriented education reporting, as well as parts of editors, a full-time engagement editor in that case, photographer, et cetera. I mean, really creating a big carve-out for solutions-oriented reporting. And the Times was interested in doing this because it realized that, yeah, the Times has covered education issues in Washington State for many years, very well. One of their reporters on this project, you know, literally has been on the job for 20 years, covering schools in Seattle. So very expert. But they understand exactly what the problems are, and their readers understand exactly what the problems are. So if nothing else, the coverage was starting to get predictable and stale, and to the point was not adding a whole lot of value for the Times audience, for the community, for anyone. So the editor at the time, David Boardman, said, "Well, you know, let's flip this and take a solutions-oriented approach to this. Look at, you know, if we understand that the performance gap is a big problem, if we understand that absenteeism is a big problem, we understand that, you know, college enrollment or college dropouts are big problems. What are the corresponding responses to those solutions, to those problems that are occurring either in Washington State or outside Washington State that we can, you know, that we can surface, we can vet, and we can tell stories around such that we import stories about solutions that work or that don't work into the discussion of education issues in Washington State in ways that can change and kind of re-energize that that public discourse around what might work, around what does work, what could work. So they have, the Times has done, as I say, we're about 18 months into it, the Times has done a big front page feature at least once a month. There has been a dedicated blog with 2 to 3 posts a day, interactive features, and a series of live events that that translate the journalism into open public discussion on a range of issues. So really, you know, extending the runway for the reporting such that more and more you go downstream into engagement. So it's been a very exciting project, and now actually we're starting a new project just this month with the Boston Globe, also focused on education, and we will learn, you know, we will bring a lot of what we have learned working with Seattle Times into that new relationship, but the, you know, the Globe's reporting will be focused on issues that are relevant in Boston and New England.
Very cool. So, browsing around on the site, you've got solution journalism imposters. You talk about that a bit.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about imposters. What do we look for if we're looking at an imposter?
Right. Yeah. In some ways, it's funny. It's easier to talk about solutions journalism in terms of what it is not, because for traditional reporters, for good reporters, there's so many bogeymen out there. You know, what we don't want to do when we're responsible journalists. So you know, solutions journalism is not puffery. It is not about doing what we call a favor for a friend and just writing a press release about some organization that appears to be doing something good. It is on the other hand, you know, credible evidence-based reporting that can in fact be critical of a solution. I mean, part of what we're after is that, you know, we want to retain the skepticism that is crucial to good journalism. And when we examine solutions, we want to understand whether they are working or not, and how and why they are working or not. Because really, understanding which solutions don't work is just as important for society as understanding which solutions do work. You know, we learn from you know, we learn as a society from both sides. We don't do hero stories. We shy away from stories that are anchored in a, you know, a great charismatic leader who has done something spectacular. That's great. And you know, people should be part of these stories, but really the emphasis on good solution stories is on the idea, on the innovation, rather than on the charismatic leader. Because really, it's the innovation, it's the response that is going to be replicable, spreadable. It's harder to spread that charismatic leader. So we don't do the hero stories.
Good.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just sort of tackling the good, you know. It's a good thing because there's plenty of that kind of stuff out there. There's stories written about me all the time that just shouldn't see the light of day. I don't know.
I think we agree on that.
All right. A little bit of
an important one is we don't do sort of academic research stories. Solution stories are about responses that have already made the leap from good idea to actual practice,
mm-hmm.
that they have a record,
right,
they have a piece
right.
of some evidence going for them. There are plenty of good ideas that are just ideas, that are lodged in academia, that are lodged in politics, lodged in sort of you know, the public mindset. But solutions journalism examines what is real, what is happening
sure.
now.
It seems, Keith, that a distinction that I'm picking up from you is it's called solutions journalism, not the solution journalism, which, again, it sounds almost like the idea behind this is let's readjust our lens a little bit, making sure we're seeing the issue from both the Oh, the difficulty of the problem and the hope of the solution. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. That's a great way of putting it. In fact, when we go into newsrooms, we talk a lot on just that, you know, just what you've said. First of all, to understand the solution, you have to understand the problem. So a good solution story is anchored in a rigorous examination of the what's going wrong. You know, what is the systemic problem here, and what are the roots of that, root causes of that problem. Then we get into the problem. I mean, at the heart, every good solution story has, in fact, surfaced and examined a problem, and you know, gone on to explain, you know, whether or not it's successful, whether or not it works, and how and why. To your point, we tell reporters, look, there is, you know, we don't overclaim here. We don't say that something is the solution or even the best solution, because ultimately, you know, we'll never know that. And if there is a best solution, so-called best solution, one day, you know, the next week we'll find out about one that actually has a better track record. So all we're doing is putting forth a solution, explaining whether or not it works, and explaining how and why it works or doesn't work, to otherwise billboard something as the solution, as the best, is inevitably a recipe for journalistic failure. We just tell people what we know as journalists and what we can explain through the evidence.
Very good.
Now, let's go. This is so I'm captivated with what you're doing here. But you also have the website. As I'm going through it, there's articles. I mean, so I can come to your website. I can get a newsletter. I can read some articles that you've got out there. Correct. So,
mm-hmm. Well, and again, these are not our articles per se. These are articles that we have harvested from, you know, this growing body of newsroom relationships. You know, the news organizations we work with. We also increasingly are building up a network of journalists independent of newsrooms who are themselves producing solutions-oriented work. Some of this we have supported through funding. Last year, say for the first year and a half, we put together a series of so-called story funds that gave modest grants to journalists, most of them independent freelance journalists, to do solutions reporting about climate change resilience, social and emotional learning, and a third one around women's economic equity. And so there was sort of a growing corpus of stories from those funds. But also, you know, more and more journalists are just doing this sort of reporting. We are connecting with more and more reporters, and so we're finding out about more stories either intentionally or organically as people point them, as journalists point them our way. So yes, we do produce a weekly newsletter with three great solution stories a week, and on our website you can find an archive of solution stories kind of annotated and explained, you know, what makes them solution stories in the first place, what makes them good solutions journeys stories, or what are their weaknesses on the other hand. Trying to create a you know, a set of models for other journalists, such that, you know, if your journalist is interested in doing solutions-oriented stories on healthcare, you can go to our website, click on healthcare, and find a dozen great solutions-oriented stories that, you know, can help inspire or guide your work. So the models, I think, are an important foundation of what we provide for journalists.
Now, people, if they do go to your site to grab these articles, they pay for that, right? Or is it
no,
free?
No, this is all free. Everything we are doing right now, I should say most of the stuff we're doing is free. We do have some consulting arrangements with news organizations that go beyond sort of our standard offering that they do pay for. But no, basically we are we are foundation funded. We are acting in the public interest, and so most of what we do is free, including in January we launched our first Solutions Journalism Toolkit, which is a 48-page guide to the basics of solutions journalism. It's basically like, you know, attending one of our workshops, and that is downloadable from our site. It is free. It is a great tool, and so far it has been downloaded close to, we're just coming up on 2,000 downloads from all 50 states, and I think it's 104 countries at this point. And 104 countries is kind of wild, since we have not at all marketed outside the U.S. I mean, all of our newsroom relationships and most of our journalist relationships are U.S.-based at this point, and we hadn't planned on new activities outside the U.S. until next year. So it's exciting and gratifying that, in fact, it is spreading that quickly.
Mm-hmm. It shows what you're doing is so needed out there in the world, no matter what community we're talking about.
Go
ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is some power to it, and you know, typically when we go into newsrooms to do you know, workshop orientation, you know, after we spend 5 minutes explaining what solutions journalism is, and as you said, what it's not, what the imposters are, journalists very quickly get this. There's not a whole lot of resistance to the idea of solutions reporting. It's, you know, something I think that many reporters have been waiting for, in a way, to be validated, to give them, you know, they want sort of professional permission to do this sort of story, to change their frame of it.
Right, exactly. Mike, you have a comment?
Keith, real quick here, Keith, is there any movement to move this into the curriculum of journalism schools instead of having experienced or existing journalism realizing it's a good idea? Can we start training people this way?
We're on the same page, yes. There is we are working with the communication school at Temple University to develop an introductory course for undergraduate journalism students that we hope, we're not sure the exact timeline, but we hope it'll launch with the fall semester this year. If not, then the following semester. And Temple has a, you know, a great network, so we, you know, the plan is to launch it first there, and then through their connections, you know, do 3 or 4 communications or journalism schools the following semester, and then spread from there. We also have created we're working with the NewsU education site at the Poynter Institute, which is focused on development for professional journalists. We've done one webinar with them and now have a deal to do 4 or 5 more webinars in a series that would launch probably also in the fall, August, September. So, yeah, both on the journalism school side and on the professional development side, we think it's important to make those investments.
Excellent. Is this mainly for print folks, or is this TV, radio as well?
Wherever there is journalism, it is for them.
Wherever there is journalism, that's where you are.
We do have a bunch of newspaper relationships. We have quite a few relationships with public radio newsrooms. We are working, as I said, with Univision, but not elsewhere in TV yet. TV is tough. And then a bunch of online news organizations as well that we've done workshops and are developing relationships with. So,
excellent.
So yeah, I mean, really... There are no boundaries of medium on this. Wherever there is reporting, there really should be solutions reporting.
Perfect. Agreed. Keith, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. Really appreciate it. How do people get a hold of you?
People can go to our website at solutionsjournalism.org. They can email me at keith KEITH, at solutionsjournalism.org.
Perfect, perfect. Thank you so much for what you're doing. We look forward to staying in touch with what we're doing and see and how it can grow. Appreciate it.
That has been great. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Keith.
All right, thank you. All right, Mike, next week, continue our leadership in the common good theme. What's going on in your neighborhood, folks? That's changing everything for those involved. Let's get them on the show. Just send a note to me and share your story. Folks, this is Robert Thompson from Mike Neese. Thanks for listening to Thought Grenades for Monday, April 13, 2015.
Thanks for listening to Thought Grenades with Robert Thompson and Mike Neese. Catch us live every Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific on Blog Talk Radio or listen anytime you wish on iTunes.
It's fall at JCPenney. Time to refresh your closet. This Thursday through Monday, get Levi's lowest prices of the season on 514 straight fit jeans for guys, $36.99. And select Arizona booties for her for $35.99. Plus, save an additional 50% off clearance prices already reduced by 60 to 80%. And get an extra $10 off with your coupon. Hurry in now. JCPenney. Coupon valid 10-5 to 10-9. Levi's and other brands excluded from coupon. Clearance selections vary by store while supplies last. Savings off regular and original prices. Intermediate markdowns may have been taken. See store or jcp.com for details. Season refers to 9/27 to 10/18. It's fall at JCPenney. Time to refresh your closet. This Thursday through Monday, get Levi's lowest prices of the season on 514 straight fit jeans for guys, $36.99. And select Arizona booties for her for $35.99. Plus, save an additional 50% off clearance prices already reduced by 60 to 80%. And get an extra $10 off with your coupon. Hurry in now. JCPenney. Coupon valid 10-5 to 10-9. Levi's and other brands excluded from coupon. Clearance selections vary by store while supplies last. Savings off regular and original prices. Intermediate markdowns may have been taken. See store or jcp.com for details. Season refers to 9/27 to 10/18.